The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. It's all proudly brought to you by DraftKings here at Bar Cannon at the D. It's Gil Alexander, Dustin Sweetelson, kind enough to do double duty today. Two for one. Not only is he filling in for Kelly Bidlin this morning on a numbers game, but also filling his typical role as Patrick Maher's co-host and producer on Sharp Money, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. weekdays, including today. And you started the show by saying you are a doppelganger for Kelly, just different coloring.
Yeah, I think there's a section of the audience waking up right now who is like color adjusting their TV set because they're like, wait, Kelly's hair is darker. I'm not sure what's going on here. No, it's just another fat guy with a beard. That's all we have going on here. Also, Gil, I love the way you're like, oh, he's kind enough to come here. As if they gave me a choice.
I was trying to hook you up. I was trying to make it seem like you were like, you know, I'd like to do that show.
I'd like to work twice in one day. Who doesn't want to do that?
Bro, I did it for 2 years.
Yeah, that's crazy talk.
Yeah, I don't know what I was doing. We get tweets. We get texts. Michael Montesano, who was the Circa Booby Prize winner in the first Circa Millions. He says, I have Jackson Merrill 50-1. Let's go. Also have Skeens 25-1, he says. This is from Richard Palma. Richard Palma said, Shabbat Shalom. Dude, triple tribesman Friday. L'chaim, as Dustin said. And then Fezzik, who's going to be joining us. Steve Fezzik is going to join us for three segments here momentarily, who you and Patrick are super familiar with because you all have him on all the time. The only back-to-back winner of the Hilton Super Contest back in the day. He was commenting on our talk about the monthly season wins in baseball. And I want to get his exact quote, but I don't have it. We'll have him here momentarily. But basically he was saying, think about how difficult it is to win that. And then think about how difficult it is to win some other season-long stuff. Did you get that text as well?
Yeah. Also, he doesn't know this, but we're going to see if something I'm doing lately that is currently 3-2 this week, this new strategy I have.
Oh, he's going to kill you.
If I'm going to make his head explode where he tells me it's not positive EV, you're an idiot.
Dustin sent me something that we wanted to talk about. I'm like, save that for Fezzik, just because I want to see Dustin just get destroyed. Just gets screamed at by Steve Fezzik. Here's what his comment goes. MLB best records June shows how damn hard it is to hit 70% for a year in a contest. You've got teams that are playing 600 ball and none of them, he messes up with the type because he voices it. None of them are you been able to hit 700 ball for a 20 game small trial. What he's saying is it's just, yes, there's always some team, I believe, that catches fire is what he's trying to say there. Well, we'll get it. It's as if we don't have him. We'll have him on. We'll talk to him.
Voice to text, by the way, that is an age thing.
He's old. He's old. He doesn't have the strength to use his fingers to actually text us something. Paul Carr joins us from Topeka, Kansas, everybody, from the heartland. Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line to talk some soccer with us. But also... a little bit of Willie Mays as well. Before we get to you, Paul, and thank you for joining us, let us play a little Barry Lamar Bonds. This is Willie Mays' godson before the game yesterday on Fox talking about the event itself. This is on the Fox desk
facing
yesterday.
Facing Satchel Paige.
Up, but we had a conversation earlier and we were talking about the players that you would want to play with that played against the Negro Leagues. Now, playing against both of you, you two were probably two of the most confident players I ever played against. Tell me right now, on the spot, what would you do against Satchel Paige?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Gone. You have lost your mind, Gina. Gone. Simple. Gone. Read about it on ESPN. Whatever else you want to talk about. You got to believe in yourself. If I don't believe in me, who's going to believe in me?
That's right.
I'm a drag button.
Derek, you said
I'm drag button.
I'm going to take all those people off the field.
We're going to race to first.
Care, gone.
You done lost your mind, Jeter. Not lacking for confidence, Barry Bonds, who, by the way, I'm sure the Fox people were thrilled when he threw out ESPN in the middle of that. I'm sure they were thrilled.
Oh, yeah.
Paul,
yeah, good job.
You have a Willie Mays story, yes?
Well, yeah. So my sister lives out in the Bay Area, and a few years ago, she's out and about, and they're at a bookstore, and there's this line for something. She's not really sure what. And she sees this, you know, the placard that's up is like Willie Mays signing autographs. My sister is not a sports fan. She knows who Willie Mays is. So just saying something to his legacy and fame, especially out in the Bay Area. So she got in line, got an autograph. I got an autographed Willie Mays baseball for Christmas a few years ago.
Wow.
Which is pretty
That's
cool.
Awesome. Yeah.
You can't, his signature's not obvious. I opened up. I generally didn't know who it was. But, you know, a little bit of Googling and doing the math on where my sister would have gotten something, and eventually figured it out.
Beloved by everyone, but certainly by everyone in the Bay Area, for sure. Permanent fixture at Giants games throughout these years that I've been, that I was living there, and oftentimes in a wheelchair in the later years, of course, but just a fixture there. And 93 years old, of course. And just a shame that he wasn't able to quite experience the game yesterday, but he did write about it a few days earlier. Okay, Paul, we have soccer every which way. Where do you want to start here?
Look at Euros. Let's look at today. How about France and Netherlands today? Want to start there?
Let's do it. Because you mentioned this game yesterday or the day before. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have a ton more clarity on whether Kylian Mbappe would play. I think it's leaning toward that he will in some capacity. Again, he broke his nose in the last game. Will likely have to wear a mask in this contest. So, but we think he's going to play. And honestly, look, he's maybe the best player in the world. It obviously matters if he plays, but France is deep enough that I think they can handle Netherlands without him. So I have France to win at plus 125 in this one. Again, the depth is there. They may look a little different in how they defend and attack, but they still have plenty of options. And the Dutch, their midfield's not quite the same without Frankie de Jong, the Barcelona star, who's not here because of injury. So again, going with the better team here, I like France to win at 125.
The old Paul Carr going with the better team handicap on that. Yep. What about Turkey and Portugal? This is tomorrow.
Yeah, this one has the potential to get a little nuts. So Portugal is just loaded with attackers. And even if you're not dialed into the European club game, I can tell you they have a guy from Man City and Manchester United and AC Milan and all these different clubs and PSG. And I keep going just in like their front five or six. So they're just loaded up top. And that's what they do. Roberto Martinez is their head coach. He's an offense first kind of guy. And Turkey is kind of a poor man's version of that. They don't have quite as many stars, but they still tend to go for broke. So I think I like the over in this one, over 3.5 plus 190. It's got the potential to be open. They also both won their first games. So, you know, they're a little bit loose in this one. You know, it's not like they have to tighten up and get a point or three. They can go for it a little bit more. And I think that sets up for a lot of goals here.
All right. Since we don't have the opportunity to talk to you during the weekend, let's go to Sunday. Germany is playing Switzerland. I sent you a text before you get into your thoughts on this. Who was Germany playing in the first game? Who did they play?
Scotland.
Okay. So we're watching it, Kelly and I, right? It's on the screen behind us. I think it was right after the show because the game starts right after we get off. And Germany, they're in the Scotland penalty box, and one of their players just pushes one of the Scotland defenders to the ground, right? And it sets up a goal opportunity, and they score the goal. And so I text you, but I also texted Felica, who was on the set there, and I go, let me get this straight. In soccer, if a defender in the penalty box so much as like coughs on you, right? They're like, oh, PK, here, take it, which is essentially right a free goal. Like the percentage on PKs is very high. It's like a one nil lead in a soccer game it's like a 14-0, 17-0 lead in an American football game, for God's sakes. But an offensive player apparently can just shove a defender down and, oh, that's fine. Yeah, go ahead. That's, you know, that's okay. And so I tested Felica that, and he said he showed it to Alexi Lalas, and Alexi Lalas was like, that is the greatest explanation of soccer I've ever heard. Like, it's ridiculous, right? What am I missing here?
I mean, nothing. I think you have a pretty much perfect grasp on the realities of the situation. So I commend you for your soccer knowledge.
But what kind of sport are we? How's that fair?
Here's the equivalent to me is in the NFL, there's offensive pass interference. I'd say almost as often as defensive pass interference, and it never gets called. You know, the receiver just shoves the DB out of the way and makes the catch, and that's fine because, you know, we want to see touchdowns or something.
Right, but, but you don't.
Defender pulls on his towel.
Right, but it
and
doesn't.
They get 25 yards.
It's huge, but it's not quite as huge as a penalty kick, right? Like, correct. Yeah. I hear you, though. Anyway, I'm sorry.
There's almost nothing as impactful as a penalty call. And yeah, I wish there was some way to change it. You know, there's all kinds of crazy theories out there. Change the size of the box or, you know, take the penalties from further away if the foul is further away from goal. My one thing I would tweak is I would just have, if you draw the penalty, you have to take the penalty. But you don't get, you know, Lionel Messi to come take all your penalties for you if you draw a foul.
That's true, right? The Harry Kane axiom. I know you loved it, though, because you're on Germany. What do you feel about this particular match, though?
So it's important to note that, again, we're into the third day, or this is Switzerland, Germany on Sunday is the first day of the third set of group games. So you got to know your scenarios and what's going on here. Germany has already advanced. By game time, Switzerland may have already advanced because third place teams go through. So you got to let the other group games play out today and tomorrow.
Yeah.
So Germany has little incentive. Switzerland may have little incentive. So I like under 2.5 at +105 here. Because especially on the Switzerland side, if they, you know, rest a few people or don't go for it in the same way because 4 points already gets them through, then this could be kind of a, you know, a training exercise or kicking the ball around a little bit. I don't anticipate either team having the urgency. It's always a little scary to bet an under when Germany is involved, but getting plus money, +105, I'll take under 2.5 for this one.
Okay. Those are the three picks from Paul Carr. Once again, France to win it versus the Netherlands today. Turkey, Portugal over 3.5 goals at big plus money tomorrow. And then Switzerland, Germany with the under 2.5 goals for the explanation because of the explanation just given. Before you go, 30 seconds, you live in Kansas. We were just talking about the game at Rickwood Field yesterday. You are close to the Negro League Museum. You say it's worth every moment of it there. Yep.
Yeah, I've been a handful of times, several times, and you just wander through. And if you read every single thing on there, I mean, you could be there for hours. But there's just so much cool memorabilia, pictures, pennants, placards, whatever it is, that it's just a great experience for any baseball or historian fan.
Okay, I love that. Paul, thank you. Good luck with all the bets, man.
Welcome. Have a good weekend.
Paul Carr, at Paul Carr, the host of the Expected Value podcast, and of course works at True Media Networks, spreading analytics around. That's what he do. Steve Fezzik on the shield here with me and Dustin. That is next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget to check out our website, vsin.com. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, betting guides. And if you go to the vsin.com homepage today, Aaron Moore on handicapping the College World Series, Tennessee and Texas A&M. Best of three finals begins tomorrow. Aaron Moore all over that. Steve Mackinnon on college football recruiting rankings. Adam Burke doing his thing every single day, including he's got Thistletown picks, the Ohio Derby. He's doing horses as well. Good gracious. That man does it all. VSiN.com. Check it out. Dustin and I decided before the last segment, we're like, should we let some Gentiles on the show? And he was like, okay, we decided, okay, we'll relent. Ladies and gentlemen, he's the only back-to-back winner of the Hilton Super Contest. You may know him as the guy who famously bet Purdue also when they were one seed against Fairleigh Dickinson. That sort of has been his most famous moment in sports betting over the last couple years. It's Steve Fezzik, everybody, live here at Bar Canada. How you doing, Stevie?
You know, I checked in last I checked 30-0 documented laying -2,000 or more in games not involving Fairleigh Dickinson.
Oh, since then?
No.
Oh.
Including that, but not involving Fairleigh Dickinson.
I see.
Yeah, the last 3 years.
I see. Okay. Wait, I have a lot of things to ask. We both, by the way, you and Dustin go way back as well.
Oh, way back.
Steve's the first person to teach me about betting.
That is a pretty darn good place to start.
Well, I mean, you know how dumb I was. 2016, meet Patrick Maher. First day, he goes, all I care about is that Steve Fezzik and Scott Spreitzer are on the show as much as possible. We're doing sports betting every night. I said, you're insane. Nobody cares. Now it's my entire existence.
What year was that where you said
2016.
Oh, bro. Come on. No.
You know, I'm going back like how long I've been in the industry. You know, and I'm thinking back. I just sent a box score from 1992 to my buddy. We had a big weekend in October of 1992. And I'm like, boy, I'm getting old.
But it's really, it's okay. We do this professionally, but it's really like, I'm sure you have this. Maybe you don't. When I was a kid, right? I've said this many times before. I was the guy that started the football pool in school who was like, didn't want to get suspended for doing it. And then, you know, 3 years into it, finally I got caught and the teacher was like, how do I get in on this, Gil? And I was like, oh, maybe this is something to do this. And I was, you know, and then I'll take Georgetown. You guys get the field. I'll give you 5-1. Nobody taught me that.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow it was in my brain that was the proper way to do this. So I don't really know if you had those experiences or if you just came to it later.
You know, I would say the one thing that came to me right away was the idea of closing line value, and that if I could get a number that was better than what the market was, I was going to win. And so, you know, no secret, like starting right about 1993, I discovered parlay cards. And everyone in Vegas and Nevada had said, these are the biggest sucker bets of all time. You know, avoid those. And the truth is the exact opposite was true. It was like one of the greatest advantage plays you will ever see. And I got in trouble at a few places because I, you know, I was so successful with that. But literally, there was no reason for me to ever bet a game off the board. Why would I do that? I can get Northwestern plus 21.5 against Illinois. The line's 17.5.
Yeah.
You know, by playing it on the card.
But that's a fascinating thing to get. So I, you know, and again, you know, go back to how we, anybody who tells you they knew all this stuff when, you know, out of the womb or whatever is lying to you. So I, my rearing on that was Pinnacle used to put out a Pinnacle newsletter. The writer was Simon Noble. This is in the 90s. Elihu Foistel told me many years later that he used to ghostwrite it. So it could have been Elihu, mm-hmm. who, by the way, I think is just the smartest guy in the world and certainly in this industry. And by the way, sports betting might not be enough to contain him here later in life. That's how smart he is. But that that notion of closing line value came to me from him in the 90s. That's interesting that you – that was the first thing you latched onto. Couple things that I want to tie a bow around or wrap a bow. What's the expression? Tie a bow? Yeah, whatever it is. Before we move on to some of the stuff you want to talk about. One, Dustin and I were talking about the MLB wins in the month of June earlier, and you said...
Yeah, it shows how hard it is to hit 70%, because think about this. You don't have one team right now in the whole league that is hitting at a 70% clip. You got the Yankees. You got the Dodgers. You got the Phillies. These teams are going to win 6 out of 10 games, all right? So they're a 60% clip team. None of them have managed, in a small sample, 20 games... to hit 70%. So think about how hard it is to win a football contest where you got to make 85 or 90 picks for the year and you got to hit 70%.
It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. The other thing is Rufus was on. Rufus Peabody was on a numbers game earlier this week. Rufus and his team stood to lose over $500,000 on the U.S. Open if Bryson DeChambeau won. This was what they stood to lose prior to round three. He was able to... mitigate that loss, about 40% of that loss. So I think he ended up losing, he and his team ended up losing $300,000, which again is a lot of money, but in Rufus's world, not quite as much as for you and I. And you wanted to say something about that conversation or just about hedging in general.
Yeah. So in general, hedging, most people would be better off just not hedging at all, because usually you're making a negative expectation bet and you're going to wind up losing money doing it over your betting career. However, there hits a point with bankroll management that if you've got a decision that's so great, like Rufus had, so if he's got a $5 million bankroll, but he's about to have a $500,000 event, he probably should be looking to protect it. And well, one thing I would like you to ask Rufus is, he said, you know, he hedged and he bet on DeChambeau on day three, even though it was negative expectation because he had such a big position and it was crumbling, you know, that certainly DeChambeau could win. But then day four, Rufus, I believe, said this is a positive expectation now. Now he bet like $24 to win a dollar, like I did with Purdue.
Yes.
Yeah, on DeChambeau not to win. And now, crazily, he's betting even money, basically, on DeChambeau, yes, to win. So he has this horrible portfolio. But you know what? At that point, go ahead and lock in the loss. If you think that, if your numbers say DeChambeau's going to win 56% of the time and you can play minus 110, you just put all your chips in there. Just surrender, basically, and say, all right, I'm going to lose whatever it is, $238,000, and just lock in the loss.
You and I have talked about this before. The thing that gets not lost in the conversation, but the thing that needs to be sort of stopped in the middle of the conversation and pointed out, though, is Rufus laying $2,400 on Bryson, you laying minus $4,500 on Purdue. You're very math oriented. Rufus is doing things by model. It's very precise, where he has confidence in his numbers. The average bettor is not like you two, right?
He's just flying by the seat of his pants. And
that's right.
And he's like, this cannot happen. And I'll use an example. These tails, these outliers, are greater than you think. So I'm not a hockey guy, but I'm watching game five. And I see this open net goal, and it's going to be an open net goal. And there's some poor Florida Panthers, Tkachuk, I think.
Tkachuk,
And there's not a chance.
What a play, by the
way. There's not a chance. They can play it 1,000 times, and that puck, as sure as the sun's coming up on summer solstice, in the morning.
I couldn't believe he got to it. Yeah.
And then the laws of physics cease to apply. Somehow this Tkachuk's, like managed to swing his stick wildly and knock the puck, and it doesn't go in. And I freeze it. I would have laid minus 4,000. That's a goal. Like,
yeah, right.
1 second before that.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely. I think that's the... That's the point. What is the overall thing? So what would you say is an overarching point to the average bettor? Okay, who's trying, like Rufus, the thing is the Rufus case study is a fascinating one, but it's not like the, it's, and I'm so grateful for him to come on and share, and he's super transparent on his Twitter. But like for the average bettor who is facing, let's just give a case study. If they've hit, I know you hate parlays. By the way, Dustin has a conversation that he'd love to have with you here momentarily. But let's say they've hit, because you know they're parlaying.
I've made a lot of money playing parlays.
Okay.
Parlay cards.
Then why are you so angry at people when they do? We'll get
because,
to that.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get to that. So let's say someone's hit four legs of their five-legger. By the way, sometimes it's like six of seven or whatever it is with some folks. And what's the overarching advice you give them at that point? Is there a blanket bit of advice?
Sure. So if you can make a positive expectation bet on the opposite side of the seventh leg, go ahead and do it. Example, let's say you laid 2.5 on a parlay card, right? And that line was 3 all week for your last leg. And it's Monday Night Football. And then a 3.5 pops up over at the Golden Nugget. Well, of course, play the +3.5 bet. Take the whole position. Let's say you're about to win 20,000. Bet 10,000 on the +3.5 because now you've got a very positive expectation hedge. But let's say it's painted 3 everywhere.
Yeah.
Now you're losing money when you bet the +3. Now maybe you could find a reduced vig and lay +3 -105 and you're losing money. But then you say to yourself, but no, my normal, normally I bet 200 to win 220 to win 200. And now I'm all of a sudden about to win $20,000. It's too big of a difference with a bankroll. Like if you have a $20,000 bankroll, you got to lock in a couple thousand.
Even like, even as you said that though, like I'm thinking like, oh, there's a +3.5 at the Golden Nugget. I'm sure like most people are like, well, you know, even if there was, I got to drive across town. And like a lot of people are like that, right?
Sure.
Even if they're here. But you also, you do concede that there are moments where making a negative, knowing that you're making a negative one, sometimes has justification.
Exactly, especially if it doesn't cost you much, even if it's a negative expectation bet. Look at the hockey game tonight. So let's say you've got Florida, let's say you got Edmonton, all right?
Yeah.
They're dealing dime lines on this game, like circa's like the -111, +101. So it's a very small spread. The house edge in that's like you know, 2.5%. It's not costing you much money to bet either side to lock in a nice profit.
Just to lock it in. Or I was telling you, if you have a great bet for a tournament and you have a chance to play the opponent in the final, just so that you don't lose money in the estate, like just to have that emotion.
Don't have
thing.
To hedge the whole way. Just That's put right. something down.
Right.
Right.
Dustin would like to ask Steve about a parlay situation. And Stevie has a game of the year in the NFL to provide. That is next on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Next week, we're releasing our VSiN NFL Betting Guide. The guide is your ultimate resource for the football season, packed with detailed team, division, and conference analyses. And, of course, best bets for the upcoming NFL season. To get the guide, you got to be a VSiN Pro subscriber, though. Right now, you can sign up for a VSiN Pro annual subscription for just $199. That's down from the regular price of $240. Plus, we're throwing in an extra month absolutely free with a VSiN Pro subscription. You'll get exclusive access to premium analysis, expert picks, and advanced betting tools that'll give you the upper hand all year long. Do not miss your chance to sign up and save ahead of the NFL season. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe right now and use promo code ANG to claim your discount bonus month. That's A Numbers Game. That's VSiN.com/subscribe now and use promo code ANG. Football right around the corner. How far away is the Hall of Fame game? Less than 6 weeks or 6 weeks, something like that? Exactly 6 weeks?
Ooh.
Yeah, man. Is that possible?
I got to do a podcast during the game. I think everyone, you're going to have a captive audience and it's going to be boring, right?
Before we get to your game of the year, because we were talking about this off air. Dustin texted me yesterday. He's like, hey, I got some ideas. What do you want to talk about on the show? And so we kicked it back and forth. And one of the things he said, I was like, oh, you got to say that for Fezzik. The floor is yours, sir. What would you like to ask Steve about?
Look, Steve, I know how this is going to go. But I'm doing a bit of an experiment right now, looking for these different angles with all these different baseball markets that have been up. And I started to realize for a major league pitcher to record a win, a lot needs to go right. They need to pitch 5 innings. They need to leave the game with the lead, and their bullpen needs to hold said lead. So there's a lot of factors that need to go right. So I started looking when I can go and bet on the no to record a win prop on pitchers who are big dogs, and I hate the matchup, and I don't see a way where any of those three things happen for them to record a win. Started parlaying them together on Sunday. I did four legs plus 110 winner. Monday, four legs plus 121 winner. Tuesday, four legs plus 143 loser. Wednesday, plus 125 loser. Readjusted just three legs at minus 128 yesterday. Winner. So I'm thinking...
up a unit.
We're up about, 109. Yeah. So my strategy here is to continue find those. I'm going to stop with the fours. We're going to just go down to three. And today went over at DraftKings, and I went Trevor Rogers, Miami, with Joey Estes, Oakland, and Patrick Sandoval, Angels, three bad teams against bad matchups. And I combined them, and the parlay on to not record a win is minus 102.
So I think what's going on here is I know Mark Borchin, base winner's in on this too. So everyone is like at the Italian American Club the night before, and they're all like talking
here
about
he goes.
How can we make Fez Stevie's brain explode?
That's what I said to him.
We know he hates parlays, so we can have a great conversation. Actually, I love the whole concept, all right? So lay the minus 380. I don't care what it is. If value is value, hey, I lay minus 4,500. So I'm fine with laying minus 380. But why is it that someone's like that? Our brains are programmed. Well, I don't want to bet 400 to win 100. So I'll put it into a three-team parlay, and then magically I'm not laying minus 400. But know what? Now you're laying even more because now you can't even shop for the best number in all three. And here's another thing: your bet sizing goes kaput. Because what happens, you get your three-teamer, right? And so let's say you win the first two games. Well, now you're betting more on the Angel pitcher to not get that win. But if one of those goes down, now you're betting zero on that last leg. So it makes no sense from a bet sizing perspective. Kelly Criterion, if they're all equivalent plays, just risk your $200 normal bet size and lay the minus 450 if those are good bets and do it that way.
Dustin is nodding, but give me the possibility that you're actually going to follow that advice.
No, because what Steve doesn't because he doesn't like fun,
and you've noticed
it's not about fun for Steve.
Yeah,
this is about fun.
Well, to be fair,
the minus 102 makes it feel fun.
Well, and it makes it feel square, which is good. So it actually could have a place in your portfolio because if you want to preserve your accounts play. Bets like this. I mean, if you were going to make all three bets anyways and you're getting the same mathematical price, you look like a square ball and you're much less likely to get backed off. So it has that big advantage when you throw things into parlays.
Trust me, they've seen how my baseball season's going so far. They know who I am.
So if you're already down a couple $1,000s, you don't need any cover when they think you're a dummy.
So just to clarify for those who missed it, so what Steve is saying, the way that is actually a valuable one is to give the impression to the book that you are a square ball. And so in that respect, you would endorse it. But in the general conversation of what you two are talking about, you do not from a mathematical standpoint. And you touched on something that I want to seize on, which is the average bettor. You called it something about that minus 380, let's or minus 400, whatever it is, let alone the minus 4,500 for God's sakes. But the average bettor just doesn't want to bet that. Isn't the biggest reason, isn't it as simple as their bankrolls are not big enough to sustain that loss? And when I say that, the reason is because they're not doing it at a percentage that they ought to based on their bankroll, right? Yep. No one who has, a limited amount of money in one of their accounts is going to size it properly to win such a negligible amount of money. That's what's at play.
Well said, exactly. And yes. I'm a firm believer, every game, a good rule of thumb, if it's a play you like, make your swing be consistent. So if you normally bet 220 to win 200, you're either going to win 200 or lose 220, $420 swing. So if you're going to bet a minus 320 favorite, well, now you can go ahead and lay minus 320 to win 100, $420 swing. Nothing has changed. It's a normal type of swing. I will say this is not just recreational bettors. I would say the average, smarter than the average bear, pretty good bettor, decent host. I've heard this like dozens of times. Boy, I really like this MMA fighter who's minus, he just steamed from minus 220 to minus 280. So I guess now we got to put him into parlays. And it just drives me crazy.
Your head explodes.
So, so to Steve's point, because I initially look at it and my thought is I'm not laying $4. I'm not going to do that. But I just did the math. Let's say I am right. All three do hit, right? I am up today $77. Now, if I parlay them, all three have to hit, and I'm up $98. But if one loses, I'm done. If one of them loses, I can still theoretically have an okay day.
Now, there are some people listening that are going to chime in with ROI, and they're going to say, sure, if you have a positive ROI and you put it into parlays, you have a higher ROI putting in a parlay, and they're absolutely correct. This is complicated stuff. Rufus or Ella, who can come on and explain it all. But the problem is, under Kelly criterion and optimal bet sizing, when you play parlays, they are inherently more dangerous to have long losing streaks, so you have to scale back how much you're wagering on that parlay so you don't bankroll growth as fast doing the parlays. So there's a lot to chew on, but in general, I would just say, unless you're doing it for cover, unless you have a correlation, unless you're circumventing limits, there really is no reason to be ever parlaying anything.
Cover as in, you know, showing the book that you are square, or right, trying to show them they're square. Correlated or circumventing limits. Those are the three things. You also point out inherently that when you are parlaying, and by inherently, I mean at the same book, that you are more than likely not getting the best number on each of the legs. That's very valid. One of the things that I know someone of your ilk will not necessarily recognize is that when the average bettor parlays, in some respects, it's a bit of loss prevention in certain circumstances.
Yes.
'Cause if they, let's say they start a Saturday morning and they have a 5-leg MLB parlay and they hit the first two, there is oftentimes a hidden safeguard for those folks that they're not even acknowledging, which is they would be betting more otherwise and losing more. But as long as that parlay is alive, they kind of just live on, like someone milking a drink at a video poker table. Like there's a milk factor there, which prevents them from greater losses.
It's same with a poker player playing in a tournament. You play in an $80 tournament. How much can I lose today? $80. You know, it's like if I go 0-5 and I put them all in a parlay, I'm brilliant. You know, I do so much better. The one thing that does drive me crazy is the people that play like a 5-teamer and then they get the first 3 legs in and then they hedge the 4th leg and then they hedge the 5th leg. I'm like, well, why didn't you just play the 3-teamer? Why are you? And they're like, oh, I'm getting this great middle. No, you're getting middled. You're getting squeezed on the vig on the 4th and 5th legs of the parlay.
I'm curious because we make a joke of it, but Mark Borchard, who has great numbers in baseball, but we joke every time he comes on the show, all these smart stuff, and then at the end he's like, here's my 2-leg parlay of the day. What does he say when you challenge him on that?
He agrees with me, but he's actually right. All right, he is correct because he is not betting this himself. He is giving this to his clients. His clients want to play the parlay. They don't want to play the Phillies minus 200. So he is basically just providing his clients good plays and suggesting they bet it like they want to bet it. So he's providing a good service to his clients that they can stomach more. So it makes sense.
Interesting. I did not know that was his answer. Okay.
Well, I believe that's his answer.
Let's go with that's his answer.
That's a logical, you know, conclusion to everything.
All right. Steve does have praise for a certain sportsbook in town where he has made a play of the year in the NFL. Week 8, is that where it is?
This one's week 8.
Yeah. Week 8. We will do that on the other side. He was asking Dustin and me what we thought the number would be, and then he was trying to, bet us. And he was moving the goalposts. It was a whole thing. We'll get to that. Steve's play of the year. One of them, anyway, this morning, coming up on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live here from Bar Canada at the D. It's Gil Alexander and Dustin Sweetelson in for Kelly Bidlin. Thank you for doing this, Dustin. I know Dustin says he's being held hostage and he has to do it, but I appreciate you doing it nonetheless. You will be on Sharp Money coming up at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
3 p.m. Eastern.
Oh, 3 p.m. Oh, I keep saying the wrong thing. 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific.
Like, when you choose this career,
yes,
no one ever tells you how much time zones will play a role in your day-to-day and how often you will just accidentally get them wrong. Because as the producer texting people in multiple time zones, I try to know what time zone they're in and convert to mine. And then some of them are traveling to other time zones, and we never know what time people are on.
3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific, 1 p.m. Mountain.
There it goes.
Got to get Mountain in there. We get tweets at Beating the Book. This is from NH Better. Love the double dose of Dustin Sweetelson today. Worried he wouldn't be on Sharp Money. Oh, no. He'll be on there. Paper Mike, are you sure you're not filling in for Kelly because he had shin surgery?
Well, that's my bit. I do it with Adam Burke. I did it with Kelly. I do it with Ben Wilson. Whenever they're not on a show that I work with them on, I tell everyone to wish them well because they had complications from calf replacement surgery.
Well, you know, in the case of Kelly, he actually did get injured. When Matt, me and him did this bet, this field goal bet.
It looked bad.
No.
Yeah. Kelly, I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah. Kelly was like, we're just throwing the pass. We're just acting stupid and we're just throwing passes. And Kelly like went out for a pass and he like completely.
I sent it to Dr. Chow. He said he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah.
You and Kelly also went to an athletic thing. You guys were like wearing jeans and button downs and Matt Brown was dressed in like spandex.
Yeah. Because Matt was the one who was on the line there. Yeah. We weren't doing anything. Bruce Dobigan, watching the touching Willie Mays ceremony in Birmingham, Alabama. What's sad is that the sports media who eat up this stuff never report. Oh, this is not true, Bruce. He said Black America has abandoned baseball. 7% of MLB players, 12% Black American population. Bruce, that's not true. They've not abandoned. There is not a conscious abandonment of Major League Baseball. There's a lot of factors that are involved in that, including facilities that are available and equipment that is available. And it's much more complicated than what you're making it out to be. Travis Sweet. I saw Steve crossing. This is for you, Stevie. I saw Steve crossing the strip in front of the Cromwell earlier this week and shook his hand. This is from Travis Sweet. He said he had a big smile and gave me a big hello. Super nice guy. Travis, he is. In real life, he's a super nice guy. Why is he not on Twitter, Steve?
There's a movie called Gung Ho.
Yeah.
Where like a child is really misbehaving.
Yeah.
And so the guy's boss is there, and and the Japanese child comes in and says G.I. Joe, G.I. Joe, and he's shooting a machine gun, fake one, and the gung ho, the Japanese engineer says, "That's neighbor's child. That's not me.
That's not me." Okay, I've teased this a couple times. You would like to give a shout out to the Westgate, first of all.
Yeah, so spot on with the Westgate games of the year. I've got my little packet here, so we got every game, including Week 18, nobody does this. I mean, people, there's so much uncertainty.
The squirreliest week of them all.
Is Buffalo going to be playing their starters? That's what's right. Going on with Kansas City and the like? And not only are they dealing every side, they're dealing every total.
Wow.
And they're dealing it, here's the key, at minus 110. Not this minus 115, which is plaguing our industry, and we're seeing it even with team totals. On week one, people are posting team totals routinely at minus 115, and one book just put up minus 120 in town on their games of the year. So
who did that?
I don't want to say.
Okay.
So good job, Westgate. I'm running out of places to play in the town. So I'm like mental. No, let's try. Let's just focus. Let's focus people on the positives. So Jay Cornegay, and his crack staff. Great job with, you know, doing this.
And so you reviewed, because you're the type of guy that when you find out this stuff is coming out, you are very keen on, oh, this is actually something special. You recognize that immediately. So you dive into it, and something caught your eye here.
Yeah, so I already bet a whole bunch of these. So I don't have a game of the year, because I bet like 20 of them. But I was just looking through the schedule. I said, oh, this one's good. So
we say on this show.
I'm going to give out a week 8 play, right angle sports style right now. Yes.
Are we going to move some lines?
We are going to sell. You're going to go week 8, go to the Westgate. They're apps open. Go to the Westgate.
If you're doing it right angle sports style, you have to give a dummy play first, and everybody has to put in their bets.
I'm going
to
give the play, and I'm either going to say go.
That's right.
I'm going to say cancel, or I'm going to say opposite, oppo, one of those three. So any of you people out there jumping the gun,
trying
to take your little fat thumb and press enter before everyone else. No. I might go. This might well be an opposite play. I'm warning everyone, so don't play.
Oh, don't confuse people. Let's just do the go.
Okay, we're going to go to 8. Well, that just gave it away.
Okay.
All right, week 8. Game 80297. You know I like giving rotations.
You love rotation numbers.
Set up the Green Bay Packers +1 at the Jacksonville Jaguars. I can't pronounce that. Set up the Packers +1 at the Jaguars. That's week 8 at the Westgate. Go. Go. We are betting the Packers +1. My handicap is very simplistic here. when this game is actually played, the Packers will be laying 2.5 or 3, I predict.
Oh, wow. Yes. Okay, because you asked, just to pull back the curtain here, you asked me and Dustin during the break, a couple breaks ago, you said, without looking, and we didn't, what would you make a week 8 line between the Packers at the Jaguars? I said Jaguars -2.5. Justin then said Jaguars -2, you said? Okay. Two. And you reacted. You're like, hey, what was your reaction to that? So we weren't far off at all.
Right. Well, I would make the case that the Jaguars are like the 8 of clubs. When they're the most nondescript card in the deck. They have like almost no home field advantage, and they're just an average team with a very overpaid quarterback. Whereas the Packers are a little bit overhyped. They're a little bit like, getting Super Bowl contender consideration. But the bottom line is the Packers are they are a clear-cut playoff team. And Jacksonville is an average team. And so a clear playoff contender, they got to be laying 2 at least at the Jaguars, where I don't consider the home field to be worth more than a point.
You think the way that the NFL season will go, that the Packers will end up being a road favorite there. Interesting. So that's a go. Packers +1 from Stevie, week number 8, if you have access to games of the year. Did you hear, by the way, since you bring up Trevor Lawrence and this, again, I've talked about it ad nauseum here, where it's, absolutely this cruel moment in NFL franchises' arcs where they've got to make a decision on a quarterback that they're like, yeah, he's good, but I don't know if he's going to win us the Super Bowl, but what's the alternative? Here's $250 million, guaranteed. Did you see this proposal now where a few NFL owners are starting to bring up this issue where they want to give quarterbacks, we'll see if this gains steam, they want to make the quarterback position a separate category under the salary cap. So I always say you win a Super Bowl with a Hall of Fame quarterback or a quarterback who's overperforming on a rookie salary, and then you can pay everybody else. What's happening is this very thing that I'm talking about, this cruel moment in NFL franchise's arc where they have to, all right, well, I guess we're going to have to give, Kirk Cousins the whole farm, or Matt Ryan when he was in Atlanta. Drew Brees is a different example because he actually won a Super Bowl. But some of these, you don't understand, this level of quarterback, Dak, where you just don't know if they're going to win you a Super Bowl or not. And so the NFL owners are starting to say, a few, it's gaining steam, let's just give the quarterbacks their own cap, because it's getting out of hand for that position. Now, we'll see what the NFL Players Association has to say about that, because they protect all positions.
It's like NBA, they give them a max deal. You can't give a quarterback more than $47 million a year or something?
Right. Well, it's going to be interesting, because the NFLPA represents all players, including quarterbacks. So they may say, you can't do that because we have to protect quarterbacks. Or they may say, well, we're protecting all these other players too. Maybe there'll be a trickle-down effect and the other players will get paid more as a result of this cap.
It's a separate cap where it wouldn't affect the regular cap would be the rest of the roster, and then there'd be a quarterback cap for just quarterback.
I like the way it is, because now if you want to overpay for a quarterback, then you got to pay the piper and have a bunch of crappy special teams players.
I'm with you. It makes it more interesting.
Yes.
What did you determine? We got 90 seconds left. What did you determine about, have you made a determination about the new kickoff rules? You have to see it first, though, don't you?
Yeah. To summarize, I'll go quickly. Yeah. So you got your kicker is kicking off from the 35, but everyone else is going to be on the other side of the field, the receiving side of the field. So the people covering the kicker are going to be on the 40, and the people blocking on the 30 to 35. And there's going to be two dudes that are returning the kick, and I forecast the average field position is going to be the 29-yard line. So the better field position means more scoring. I think, to answer your question, scoring will go up by about 1 point. The optimal kick to kick is to ideally you get a kicking specialist that can kick the most ugly corkscrewing, left-footed if possible, hard-to-catch ball that's coming down. You'll appreciate this, Gilly, close to what I'll call the baseline, right there where the end zone is. Because if it goes into the baseline in the end zone on fly, you get the ball in the 20. So if you're returning the kick, it's like when you and I play tennis, you're like, oh, that's a Fezzik duck that's going to land close to the base. Do I hit it? Do I let it bounce?
Yeah.
It's very difficult. You want to make a tough decision for the kick returner.
Wow, 1 point. That is your assessment so far.
Yes.
Subject to change, I guess. We'll see what happens.
It's clear cut.
Wow.
It's clear cut.
Not subject
to change.
Just under
a point. 0.85 points.
It's like this guy's confident in the stuff he says, Dustin. Round of applause for Dustin. He'll be on Sharp Money here in a few hours. Thank you, sir. Dustin, a pleasure.
Good yontif.
As the college campuses protests continue. Come back. Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Enjoy.